The following program brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities. The opinions expressed by the members of CFCI and their guests should not be construed as specific investment, legal, or tax advice. All economic and performance information is historical and not indicative of future results. Investing may involve the risk of loss of principal, and any tax advice on the show is not intended to be used by any persons for the purpose of avoiding U.S. federal or state tax. Penalties that may be imposed on such persons and each listener should seek advice from their tax advisor or legal counsel on topics that arise from the show. The representatives of CFCI and their guests are not providing legal or tax advice, and nothing should be construed as a solicitation to offer or buy securities. Now enjoy the show. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the big show. Your Money with David Hayes. Thanks so much for hanging out with us. I appreciate it very, very much. We have a good one today. We're going to be talking about understanding these record highs. I know a lot of folks are thinking, why in the world would we be hitting these record highs with all of this potential news out there that could be causing the markets to go the other way? And later on, we're going to talk about the coming tax storm and how the new and hopefully coming Trump tax cuts can help you be locked and loaded and ready when the time comes. But let's do a little news of the week brought to you by the Monroe County Sports Hall of Fame. Of course, it's supported by Comprehensive Financial Consultants. That's us, yours truly. To learn more about Monroe County Sports Hall of Fame, go to mcshof.com or Google Monroe County Sports Hall of Fame. All right, here's something that Mary Beth Franklin wrote about in investment news this past week. Typical retirees could see their expected Social Security cost of living adjustment for 2018 virtually wiped out by a big jump in Medicare premiums. Still more than a month away from the official 2018 COLA announcement, the latest CPI for August suggests that Social Security benefits would increase by about 1.8%. COLAs are based on increases in the CPIW, which I've always called the Consumer Price Index for the wage earner, but actually it's for urban workers, which is kind of the same thing. Social Security Administration will make its official announcement about next year's COLA increase in October. The anticipated 1.8% increase would be a substantial boost over the last year's 0.3% cost of living adjustment, which followed no increase in 2016. But I want to talk about the hold harmless provision. This is what a lot of folks don't know about. Most people have their monthly Medicare Part B premiums deducted directly from their Social Security benefits. The hold harmless provision prevents the annual increases in their Medicare premiums from exceeding the dollar amount of the increase in their Social Security benefits. This hold harmless provision currently protects about 70% of Medicare enrollees. Medicare enrollees are not protected by the hold harmless provision if they are not collecting Social Security benefits or because they wanted to delay the benefits to get more later. But new enrollees in Medicare are also not covered by the hold harmless provision. I think they thought, well, this sounds like a good idea until it wasn't such a good idea. The 70% of Medicare recipients are not getting a Medicare adjustment upwards because they're under the hold harmless agreement. Most people who enrolled in Medicare before 2016, they paid about $104 a month for Medicare Part B premiums. That covers your doctor's fees, outpatient services, things like that. In 2017, Social Security benefits increased 0.3%. That boosted the average benefit about $5 a month. So then Medicare Part B premiums capped at $109. In contrast, new enrollees in 2017 pay the new Medicare premium rates of $134 a month. And that's not everybody. If you make a lot more money than the average Joe, then your Medicare premiums will be much greater because that's only about 25% of the actual cost. Last week we talked about Bitcoin. Well, in the Wall Street Journal this past week, it was on Tuesday, September 19th. There was a really good article by James McIntosh. I would look it up. It's under Streetwise. He's an independent writer for the Wall Street Journal. He says, so is a single Bitcoin worth $500,000, $5,000, $500, or a dollar? Of course, I'm inclined to say a zero, especially if Bitcoin's value depends on being adopted by a global digital currency thingy to replace dollars. There's no chance whatsoever that Bitcoin can replace the dollar for the simple reason that it's badly designed. Bitcoins can handle very small transactions, a very small number of transactions, and uses a ton of electricity to do so, making it very, very unsuitable to replace ordinary moolah, the greenback. So I would take a look at that, and yeah, I think it's worth reading, especially if you're a Bitcoin fan. And then finally, I wanted to say thank you to the Chamber of Commerce by making Comprehensive Financial Consultants the mid-size company of the year for 2017. Thank you for that. Very humbling. I thought we were a small company. Doug Hughes now joins me here live in the studio. Dugger, we have 18 people that work at our office. It includes 4 or 5 financial advisors, a couple portfolio managers. We have 2 tax preparers. We have, 18 total. Seems pretty small to me, but man, what an honor that we were chosen as the medium-sized business of the year.
Boy, it's an amazing honor, and really, we had no idea this was coming. I mean,
no.
We just stick our heads down to the desk and work every day and do the best we can for people in what we do, yeah. And here we are all of a sudden, so we're very thankful for that.
We're almost 25 years old, and
25 years old.
So we really are appreciative of it, but you know, it doesn't hurt that a former employee, very good friend of ours, Jim Inman, was on the selection committee at the Chamber of Commerce.
Yeah.
So you think it was a rigged deal?
I don't think so.
You think it was legitimate? We'll see. We'll let you know if we think it's a rigged deal later on. But we are just genuinely appreciative of the honor and humbly accept it. And thank you. Thank you very much again. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, understanding these record highs, I'm going to give you a little weekly update after a brief stumble. The week of September 4th, domestic indices notched gains again last week, hitting new highs. Why is that happening? I have a couple thoughts about it when I come back. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Your Money with David Hayes. Appreciate you hanging out with us. It's going to be a good one today. The Dr. Doug Hughes is in the house. Of course, he is not a doctor, but plays a doctor on the radio. As I've always said, we appreciate
not on TV,
just on the radio. Let's talk, Doug, a little bit about understanding these record highs. We wrote about this in the weekly commentary this past week that you can go to cfci.us and check out. You know, after a brief stumbling the week of September 4th, the domestic equities notched significant gains last week, hit new record highs again. By Friday, all the major indices were up. And by looking at these sizable increases, you might expect that positive data and geopolitical calm filled the news last week. But no, that's not what happened. We experienced a number of occurrences that could have derailed stock performance. We had North Korea test another missile. London experienced another terrorist attack. Industrial production declined in August. Retail sales fell in August. So you think about it, and you're like, why did stocks rise again despite these less than stellar updates? Of course, we have to say, right here on the show, to stay compliant, that it goes without saying that the markets are incredibly complex. You rarely, if ever, can obviously point to one thing that will drive performance. But there's still a few details out there that puts this week, or last week, gains into some perspective. Investors, the market mostly ignored North Korea and the London bombing rather than running to the less volatile investments that we've seen in the past after both big geopolitical events or typical havens that we've seen. They actually declined after over a dozen North Korean missile tests and maybe in multiple London terror attacks this year. The major markets, the market movers, the major investors, mutual funds, hedge funds, pension funds, they may just simply be feeling complacent about these occurrences, Doug. Instead, are looking at other things to drive the market. It's unfortunate, but I'm afraid that's the case.
It may be, David, and we don't know exactly the impact also of such a large amount of cash being on the sidelines and at some point people having to maintain within their investment policy statement or their prospectus that they can only be 5% in cash at any one time, therefore they have to put money into the market. So there may be some of that that's coming up too, which isn't necessarily ignoring the warning signs. It's just by prospectus these things must be done. But to your point, we could be looking one way and the market could be doing something totally different. And this can turn very quickly.
The cash comment, I was going to save that for the end of the segment, but I'll say it now. I think that you have so much money that's consistently flowing into the market via 401ks, 403bs, that you just don't stop. When you look at the peak of the baby boom generation, born 1961, they're in their mid-50s now. what are they doing? They're cramming in the maximum they can to their 401ks. Millions and millions of people doing it. When you have that many people shoving their money automatically, monthly, weekly, whatever, into these funds, and not enough people on the backside letting go of those funds on the spending side, Doug, it's just math that says that this thing could be pretty stable or keep going forward for quite some time. The question that was posed to me this week when I gave someone that theory, how long will it continue? And I'm like, well, it's hard to say. I mean, we have 10,000 people a day now turning 70 in this country. We still have the peak of the baby boom generation plowing money away probably for the next 7, 8, 9, 10 years, I would say. So I don't know. I mean, by the time you sort of get the barbell effect, people taking out versus taking in, maybe 5, 6 years, I have no idea. That doesn't mean that I'm predicting we're going to have a 5 or 6 year, you know, bull run. I'm just saying this could be one of the reasons that the market shows stability in light of missile launches, terrorist attacks, and then pretty rotten numbers when it comes to industrial production and retail sales. But, I mean, we did have the big Hurricane Harvey, which likely pushed down both industrial production and retail sales in August, meaning that these data declines could be temporary. That could be one thing. Your thing, CPI, actually advanced after missing expectations 5 months in a row, beat estimates for August for the first time in a long time. And, you know, that may give the Fed some reason to move later this year. Of course, we'll hear more from them this week. Actually, I believe it was Wednesday. So actually, I don't have the information exactly what they said or what they said and how they said it. But that's going to have some impact on the markets moving forward.
Absolutely. And I want to go back to one thing that you mentioned, the baby boomers. What we are finding more and more of, for everyone just to be kind of informed, what we are finding more and more of are people are really, and we've talked about this program for many years, people really are trying to round the edges and get their financial plans together. We see it, David, more and more all the time. People who are wanting to get their credit cards paid off, people who are wanting to make sure the student loans are in check. But more importantly, we continue to have that question, how much do I need to save for retirement? And how do I get there? And we've been answering a lot more of those questions.
Oh,
for those people who are out here listening, you know, there is nothing wrong with picking up the phone, setting an appointment with a financial professional and just saying, am I saving enough? Is there something I'm missing on my savings rate? And we've been dealing with a lot more people asking those questions. So I just want to encourage everyone out there, if you know you had a great return this year because the markets are high and you looked at a calculator a year or two ago and you feel optimistic because your balance looks better, that doesn't necessarily mean you're at the right savings rate and your savings are going to the right places. So I would encourage everyone to reach out, find a financial professional, and just talk about your savings rate. You might be surprised what you find.
Well, we just hired a brand new person in our office that does a lot of that analytical work. He's been there almost 2 months and have just had a ball having him around, helping us dig through numbers because, you know, we're busy.
Yeah.
And we have systems that we've used. But I've always questioned those systems in a great way. And he's been able to help us sort of dig down deeper and deeper. And he's a critical thinker, which is great. You're a critical thinker. I am too. About, hey, what's the real story here?
Yeah.
So it's been a lot of fun. A lot of fun for sure.
Absolutely.
Hey, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll see what's going on here in the station. And wait, when we come back, we're going to be talking about tax cuts. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Your Money with David Hayes. Doug Hughes is in the house with me. Appreciate everyone hanging out with us. Hey, a few months ago, maybe several months ago, we had a gentleman on the show named David McKnight. He wrote the book called Power of Zero, and it's how to transform your life, how to transform your retirement to getting to the 0% tax rate. He did a really good job of framing this scenario up. He talks about in January of 2011, a CPA named David Walker appeared on a national radio show, made a grim prediction and picture of our country's fiscal path. He said, based on the fiscal path we're currently on, future taxes would have to double or our country would go bankrupt. Then he sat back and challenged the listening audience to come up with a four-letter word that simply explained why. The calls, of course, came pouring in. Debt, wars, Doug and I know, kids came next. After a few more guesses, Dave Walker revealed the answer. It's math. Who's David Walker? Well, for 11 years, he served both under the Clinton and Bush administration. He served as the United States Comptroller General of the United States, the head of the Government Accountability Office. He knows more about our country's fiscal state than perhaps anyone on the face of the planet. He actually resigned in 2008. He began crisscrossing America, sounding the warning sirens to say, hey, we've got to do something about this. So just to simply put your hands around this, Doug, you know, we've listened to him many times. He's pretty profound guy. But he said, hey, to understand the urgency behind my message, look no further than the mathematical realities facing Social Security. It was first implemented as part of the New Deal back in 1935. The math worked really good based on expected birth rates, life expectancies. This thing would be viable in forever. There were amazing 42 workers putting into the Social Security system for every one person taking out. And ironically, the official retirement age was 65. But Duggar, the life expectancy was like 62 or something
62,
like that.
Yeah.
So if you didn't make it, if you did make it to 65, it wasn't expected that you would draw on it for very long before you kicked the bucket, not taking it for 25 or 30 years like what we've seen today. It was never intended to be a retirement program. It was simply insurance against living too long. But then something happened that would change Social Security forever. World War II. Soldiers started coming home, started doing something at an all-time rate, having babies. Great, right? More babies, more workers, more people paying into the system. We might think that would be all true had the baby boomers, like my dad, had as many kids as their parents did. But they didn't. They had 32 million fewer kids than their parents did, and this is where the math catches up with us. Look at my family. Yeah, my dad, we have four kids, but he had six. Doug, do you know how many kids were in your dad's family? How many brothers and sisters?
There were one brother and an adopted sister. So
just
two.
Yeah. My father-in-law was the oldest of 10.
Mm-hmm.
He had three kids.
Wow.
So when you think about the math, that's the math. That's when it starts to catch up with us. Today, the ratio is three people paying in to one person taking out of Social Security. In about 9 years, it's projected to be 2-1. The cost of Social Security is about $7 billion each year, about 20% of our federal budget. And it's been kicked down the road many, many times by both parties alike, continue to make more and more promises without any thought on how we're going to pay for it. So right now, today, we spend 76 cents of every dollar we bring in our budget to pay for four things: Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, and interest on our national debt. If nothing changes, David Walker says that it will soon be 92 cents of every dollar. And he's saying in like 5 years. That leaves 8 cents to pay for everything else. And that's everything else. Homeland Security, DEA, Armed Forces, Congress, FEMA. I mean, we've heard a lot about FEMA lately. FCC, SEC, FBI, IRS, NASA. I mean, all the armed forces, as I said before. And you're thinking, okay, I'm kind of getting this. But taxes will never double, right? Well, if you look at the tax code of the U.S. history, if you look at the history of the U.S. tax code, we actually collected our first tax. It was a temporary tax in 1913. It was pretty harmless. The tax rate was only 1%, but then we were hooked. By the time we got to 1943, the highest tax rate was 94%, but only on people making $200,000 more per year. So who made $200,000 in 1943, right? Well, if you do the math based on inflation, it's about $1.5 million. Well, believe it or not, there's quite a few people that make $1.5 million in the United States. And they're being taxed at 94% back in 1943. Well, you might think no one really made that kind of money. Yes, they did. And one person that you knew real well, actor turned politician, Ronald Reagan. In fact, if you read the books about Ronald Reagan, he was getting paid $100,000 per movie. He'd only make two movies a year. Otherwise, that third movie, he only kept 6 cents of every dollar he made. So let's flash forward to today. The marginal top rate, 39.6%. What's going to happen? Taxes will likely go up. When? Hopefully not soon. In fact, Doug, the Trumpster is out there banging the gavel saying, we want taxes to go down. So I'm asked the question all the time, how does this kind of play into your theory of moving more taxable dollars to tax-free? How does it work? My answer is, enthusiastically, it even gets better. Mm-hmm. I mean, here's the facts. If Trump does push his tax cuts through, it'll likely be under what's known as the Budget Reconciliation Act. The passage of a controversial law typically requires a filibuster-proof supermajority or three-fifths vote in the House and Senate. And since Trump would obviously never get that done, the supermajority, he has the alternative of pushing his tax cuts through what's called budget reconciliation. Budget reconciliation only requires a simple majority, which he has in both House and Senate, and it's filibuster proof. Here's the catch. Just as with the Bush tax cuts back in 2003, any tax reductions pushed through under budget reconciliation would sunset in 10 years. In other words, Trump can get his tax cuts through, but in 10 years, they're gone. Taxes would then revert back to current levels, and this is where I think the math would catch up with us. At that point, they would have to raise taxes, have to, just to pay for the things we've already promised. We call them unfunded liabilities. That means getting yourself from 100% taxable or even 50% taxable into more tax-free is more important than ever. What better incentive to begin the process of repositioning dollars from these taxable, tax-deferred buckets into tax-free? You have you're going to have a 10-year window of opportunity, I hope. Every year that goes by that you don't take advantage of those, your window shrinks. So talk about a sense of urgency. I think it's bigger than ever. I think that the enthusiasm should be there. And Doug, my message here is that people need to become ready. They need to become locked and loaded. And whether you're young or old, it doesn't matter. If you're young, that's great. If you're old, that's fine, because you're going to leave tax-free dollars to your heirs. And David Walker said it. Not David Hayes. I'm only repeating it. Taxes will have to double to pay for the things we've already promised. So get ready to be ready to move taxable money to tax-free. Duggar, I can't beat that drum enough.
David, you know, we talk often an awful lot and we think an awful lot as investors about market returns. What we don't think about are tax returns. And this is something we really need to be focusing in on. And honestly, when people don't understand the different ways to maneuver through the tax system on your retirement dollars, they could be leaving a lot of dollars on the mm-hmm. table.
Oh, yeah.
And sometimes it's easy to hear something and think, oh, that'll never be. It couldn't be that way. But the reality is, folks, two things are certain, death and taxes. And you're going to have a relationship with taxes even after you're retired, unless you do begin taking some of these steps that we're talking about.
We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about a new study that shines the light on 401 education, how important it's needed in America. I did a talk at the Harvard Faculty Club last fall that you can check out on our website. Under speaking engagements, I looked at it today, so go to cfci.us under speaking engagements. That's a 5 or 6 minute talk that I gave on the importance of getting America retirement ready and the importance of providing education to your employees. We're going to come back and talk about that new study. Pretty fascinating. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Your Money with David Hayes. Appreciate you hanging out with us. Doug, you know, I have been so passionate, and I know you have been too, mm-hmm. about educating people. You know, our mission statement at our office is to inspire the people we touch to do the right things for themselves, their families, and their businesses. We want people to feel comfortable with the financial decisions they make. We will educate and communicate, giving you confidence in our abilities to serve you. But I think the education is it. I think the inspire is it, because when it comes down to this stuff, folks, listen, I can't give it to you. I cannot do it for you, nor can anyone else. All we can do is help inspire you to do the right things for yourself, your family, and your businesses. And Doug, the fact is that most people spend more time planning vacations than they do planning their estate, planning their retirement. You fill in the blank. There's a lot of research that's been done around this, and particularly surrounding the 401k planning. I mean, it has become a digital component, including these online solutions that you talked about that help workers understand their plans, calculate financial needs in retirement, select investments. The problem is that most Americans will say we're unhappy with the education and services we're getting from our plan. Why? Because they don't engage the system. They want to be engaged. There's an overwhelming arcing theme from a new report that came out from 401k Wellness in the Workplace Survey, spearheaded by a company called KRC Research. And the research examined 401k plans across the country, I think 1,000 or more U.S. employees working at companies offering 401k plans. And they talked about how, you know, they're simply flunking the test. I mean, the number one thing, Doug, they say is the lack of in-person financial counseling to help explain the stuff. You know, many workers say they don't understand the fundamentals of retirement planning or even know their own 401ks. The finding says that in small businesses, nearly 4 in 5 employees have basically no knowledge of their 401k. Looking down through here, they gave them a quiz, and 57% don't know the percentage of the salary that they should invest to achieve their retirement goal. 76%, Doug, cannot define a mutual fund. Wow.
Wow.
6% cannot name the provider of their 401k. And this knowledge gap, believe it or not, is more pronounced amongst the nation's younger workers, the millennials. And you would think, okay, if this is a digital component now that is providing the education, they would be very engaged. But just 1 in 5 workers born between 1980 and 2000 correctly passed a 11 pop quiz questionnaire about their plans, compared to 40% of baby boomers who actually pass. My guess is when you're 20s, you're not thinking about it.
Mm-hmm.
When you're 45, 50, you're thinking about it. So there's a lot of stuff here. And my point in even the talk I gave last fall is I think it's going to become so important for an employer to become more paternalistic or maternalistic, take care of your employees by giving them the education, providing them the tools, and yes, automate some of this stuff. Auto enroll, auto escalate. Quit thinking that 3% is enough and that I'm never going to touch it again. I was just in a retirement plan meeting this past week, and we were looking at people that have been in the system 30 years, Doug, that have the exact same dollar amount going in that they did 30 years ago, mm-hmm. because they never touched it. So what is the harm in auto enrolling someone at 4%, 5%, or 6% with a 0.5%, 1% annual increase to get them to 10 or 12% of their pay? You know, that's what you need to do. Make them opt out, not opt in. People will not opt out on average. They will not opt in on average. Mm-hmm. So do it for them. Make it automatic. Make it systematic. And, Doug, number one, you've got to provide the education. Otherwise, you know, people are out there as lost sheep.
You know, David, the reality is that we've talked about this on the program before. Pensions are drifting away. But what isn't drifting away is people's memories of their grandparents who had pensions,
mm-hmm.
or their parents, if they're baby boomers, who had pensions. But as we say, you're on your own now. And the reality that there's so much misinformation or lack of interest in this lets you know that there's also a bit of a malaise. People just are not getting involved. You should be looking at your website. You should be learning. You should be reading. You should be watching the videos on the websites. Come to our website to learn more about
right.
this stuff.
All kinds of tools.
All kinds of tools. It's kind of like you've had more tools than you've ever had before, and we're doing nothing with it. Think about
sounds
this,
like
too.
Sounds like my garage.
Yes, but think about this, too. We've even got it down to a point where now you don't even have to choose funds. Just choose your retirement date, and it's chosen for you. It's almost as though people want to have so much of a hands-off approach to their retirement and to make it as easy as possible, they don't realize that it takes real work and real thought planning.
Yeah, and that's going to get you close.
Get you close.
But the classes that you just are mm-hmm. in the middle of teaching right now at Ivy Tech, Retirement Planning Today, you spent nearly 6 hours with these folks
yes.
going through the retirement planning process, everything from life planning to income planning, to investments, to insurance, to estate
distributions,
planning.
Distributions, oh rollovers, you name it.
All the mistakes that people can make, the roadblocks that they'll have, mm-hmm. health care in retirement, Medicare, I mean, all of that. Your 401k website simply isn't going to do that.
No.
I looked at one this week. In fact, the new guy that's helping us out with our financial mm-hmm. plan said, this is kind of weird. It was a well-known retirement plan. And it said, this person's only going to get $1,200 of Social Security. It was basically guesstimating their potential income from this retirement plan mm-hmm. at ages in the future. Well, the person that we were looking at is an attorney. They've maxed out their Social Security wage base for quite some time, saving it a decent clip. And I'm like, yeah, this is way off. This should be like $1,000 more than what it says.
Mm-hmm.
So these things are truly guesstimators, not they're not super accurate. And I think you've coined the term, let's quit income guessing, right?
That's right. And we need to do income planning, not income guessing. And there is a lot of people's portfolios who are just based on guesstimates. I'll tell you, the other guesstimate that people are making is they just average annual returns. They look and and what we always say to people about average annual returns is it's an average. It's not a steady. It's not a consistent. And it really depends on when you get in or how that has worked out in the highest income earning years that you have as well.
I heard this question asked to Rod on Glass in the Morning from Keith, and he said, hey, I keep hearing the markets are going up, 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 but I look at my statements and I just don't see that much, you know, growth. And Rod had a great answer. He said, well, Keith, more than likely you're not 100% in the market. This week I had a person say, give me an estimate of what you think I should use for my returns for the next 10 years. Well, what's your allocation? 60-40. What do you think the 60 is going to do? Stocks. Let's say 8. Okay, what about the 40%? Let's say 4, 3 or 4. Okay, well, let's say 60% of your money does 8%. 40% of your money does 3.5%. Mm-hmm. Well, that worked out to around 5.8% average annualized return. People put in too high of an estimate in their calculations. I would much rather assume 4 or 5 mm-hmm. and get 6 or 7 than assume 8, which has been beaten to our heads because the average return in the S&P 500 over the last 30 years has been whatever. Or we listen to radio programs, not this one, but other very popular ones that say, invest in this mutual fund and get 8 to 12%.
Yeah.
Folks, it's just not realistic, especially when it comes from a risk-adjusted return.
Yeah, and also what they don't factor into that is the reality of timing. And we've talked about how different timing and when you're taking income, when you're starting to accumulate it. A lot of this really boils down to, as we talked about earlier in the program, knowing what your savings rate is and how it adjusts all along the way with time. And to your point, David, there are a lot of people who will move in and out mm-hmm. of their investments. The Dalbar study that always showed that the average investor only really averaged about 2.5 to 3%. And why is it? It's not because their funds are bad. It's not because the markets are bad. It was because their behavior caused them, when the markets were going down, they'd move. When the markets are going up, they'd move. And so investor behavior also has a lot. There's very few people who just stick with something and get that 8 mm-hmm. or 12% average annual return because they're moving around so much.
This research showed from The Beat. It was in a National Underwriting and Life and Health magazine. They say one factor in that people give a low priority to retirement planning when asked how they allocate their time to personal activities, just 13% of workers say they plan for their long-term financial future. I get it. Spending time with family and loved ones, 52%. Health routines, 23%. Getting some fun time, leisure time, 22%. When they allocate time to finances, the focus tends to be on very short priorities, like ensuring bills are paid. That's 66% of respondents. Monitoring your savings and checking account, 53%, just 16% of Americans say they monitor their 401k accounts on a regular basis, and whether that's good or bad, I don't really know, and 12% devote time to preparing for a comfortable retirement. So once again, folks, I've been saying it for years, people spend more time planning vacations than they do planning their retirement. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we are certainly transforming ourselves into a service economy, like we call it a gig economy or a side hustle economy. Retirement planning can get really, really tricky for these folks. You know, whether it's Uber, Etsy, Lyft, or Fiverr, more people are making their livelihood from freelancing. A good Wall Street Journal article this week to talk about what people in those situations need to do to prepare for retirement. We'll be back. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. You know, it's interesting. The millennial generation have been studied, and they say that they value their freedom, their flexibility, their time, their social life more so than money. You're seeing a lot of people move into this side hustle economy, side gig economy, but for some people, it's their full-time gig. I mean, maybe it's Uber, Etsy. If you don't know what Etsy is, it's kind of cool, like Doug might make bracelets. He doesn't make bracelets, but let's say he did. He might want to sell them on Etsy. Or you have Lyft, which is like Uber, or Fiverr, which are folks that will do just about anything for you for $5 or $10, or do brochures, I mean, anything you want. Mm-hmm. You get what you pay for, just so you know from experience. But the bottom line is more people are making their livelihood from freelancing. And Doug, I'm not just talking about millennials, I'm talking about people that are retired. Wayne Thacker's father-in-law, mm-hmm. father-in-law, is an Uber driver.
And he's a very successful Uber driver.
Mm-hmm. Another good friend of mine, I told them that story, mm-hmm. and they were like, my dad needs something to do. He's 70-ish, young 70s. He's now Uber driving, and I saw him this week, and he's fired up. I mean, yeah. Making money, meeting people, staying busy. He said, I'm going to make $2,000 this month.
Wow.
I'm like, okay, well, first of all, Paps, here's the deal. You're a independent contractor. That will be 1099 to you. Do you know what that means? No. That means that's $2,000 is not all yours. You first have to pay self-employment tax. Mm-hmm. You have to pay federal tax, self-employment tax, by the way, folks. You pay both sides of the aisle. So 7.65 times 2, call it 15.3, pay federal tax on the gross amount. Then you pay state income taxes, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, holy moly, by the time you add it up, maybe I'm only keeping 1,000 of the two that I made. But don't forget to keep track of your gas cost, your mileage. I don't want to give you some real big time advice here, but you can either do real expenses or mileage method, but it doesn't make any difference. Maybe depreciate your vehicle, knock down some of that. I mean, there's ways to keep more of what you have. But one thing that I wanted to talk about was, hey, if you are in a self-employment situation, whether it's a side hustle, a gig that you do on the weekends, or you're a full-time self-employed person, Doug, there are ways for people to save. Simply IRAs, Roth IRAs. Mm-hmm. I mean, in 2017, the contribution maximum amount is $5,500. If you're over 50, you can add in another $1,000. Not everyone qualifies, certain income limits, but most people do. You could do a SEP IRA. And for those people, you can contribute up to 25% of the money you make, up to $54,000. And whether you do it in a Roth setting where you pay the tax on the seed money but not the harvest, or you go ahead and take the tax deduction, which is very tempting and drug-like because it's addicting to take that deduction up front, whether you do a solo 401k where you can contribute up to $18,000 a year, 24 if you are over 50, and then you make your own profit-sharing contribution up to $54,000 or $60,000, depending on age. Simple IRAs, like what we have at our mm-hmm. office, where you know you can contribute up to $12,500. Your employer or yourself matches, usually around 3%. But, Doug, there's a lot of vehicles that are out there designed specifically for self-employed people. And I think one of the biggest fears for self-employed people is that they don't want to have to do something because their cash flows are so uneasy.
Right.
But you could set this up as automatic as it is to press that Uber, I'll take the ride button.
Absolutely.
And go pick someone up.
And you know, automatic deductions from your checking account, they can actually be, David, as low as $100 a month. So people can really set this up and do great things with this. Just make it automatic, and like everything else, in a few months, you don't even really know what's
happening.
If
you'd like to know how to make your life more automated, Wayne Thacker is pretty darn good at this. I mean, he probably claims to be better than he really is about self-automation.
No doubt, yes.
But there are certainly ways that when you collect a dollar of income, whether you be self-employed or employed, that you can immediately put some of that away. It's much easier when you get $100 mm-hmm. bucks to put 10 away than it is to put, you know, 300 away when you got 1,000. I mean, it's just
right.
It's just not as easy. But if we make it automated, then it will make your life much, much easier. I think that the side hustle economy is a really cool thing. There's just so many opportunities for people. I've been promoting it to retired people.
Absolutely.
They're like, you know, make some money. You're social. Enjoy your life. And it is easy.
Mm-hmm.
It is easy to do. You don't have to work nights. Everyone thinks you got to work nights around here to make any money. My friend's father pretty much turned it on around 12. And did it until like 5 or 6 o'clock, 3 or 4 days a week. And
there you
go. He said
yeah.
He was picking people up all around town. Drove someone out to Paintown
yeah.
This past weekend. So it's not just dropping them from Kirkwood over here to 10th Street
Absolutely.
At their apartment. I mean,
sometimes I
didn't
even go up to the airport, different things like that. And that's another area where they're getting
yeah.
some money just running people to the airport in the
mornings. I love Uber. I mean, when I'm
too.
Out of town,
yeah.
I Uber everywhere. I'm going to be out of town this weekend, and I can guarantee that my Uber will be, I better make sure I'm updated on all my payment methods. But yeah, I'll be Ubering all over this week. So hey, let's take another break. We'll come back. Doug actually attended a workshop this past week on investor fraud. It was the workshop that we promoted last week's show when we had a lady from the Attorney General's office call in. So we're going to talk to Doug about his experience with the workshop, what he thinks, and what people need to be watching out for. We'll be right back. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Your Money with David Hayes. Hey, if you are working at Premier Health here in Bloomington, I mentioned a few weeks ago, but we're really approaching this deadline because you were absorbed by IU Health to make a decision with your 401k plan. I just started getting some emails and inquiries today from three different people on what they should do. Your options are either to move it to the new 401k plan with Empower that's through IU Health or move it into an IRA. I was on the phone with the folks from Empower for about a half an hour a couple weeks ago. I learned everything that you would want to know about their plan, from the plan expenses to in plan Roth conversions, if that's an option or not, to early in-service distributions, if you want to take money out of 59 and a half, all kinds of things. So please, if you're needing to come up with an answer, email us at cfci.us, cfci.us. Just contact us. We will absolutely get right back in touch with you and help you make an informed investor decision. And also, if you are approaching age 65 or you are on Medicare, know that the Medicare annual lecture period is coming up very, very soon. If you have any questions about that, again, email us at cfci.us, and we'll put you in touch with Joshua, who is our Medicare consultant. Hey, Doug, you attended the investor workshop on fraud prevention. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, it was a really wonderful program. Connie Lawson, who is the Secretary of State for us here
in
Indiana.
Who was our guest on the show last week.
She was there, and she kind of spoke for a few moments. I was very impressed. Indiana is one of 12 states that actually got some money from the Investor Protection Act that came out after the 2008 crisis and the Bernie Madoff scenario. And they actually made a movie in this movie that we saw. It's called Scammed, and it had three different events that happened that actually impacted Hoosiers. One were instruments into religious places. Mm-hmm. The other was a gentleman who was inviting money and bringing money in with people who he made good friends with. Mm-hmm. Into a fund that was not registered, it didn't exist. And the last one was a Medicare or a Medicaid spend down strategy through real estate. Mm. What was very interesting about all three of these particular cases is these people started well, but when they ran into personal financial problems is when they started deviating from these things. Couple of things they said to be aware of: affinity, don't just invest money with someone because you like them. The second thing is be aware of high or above normal consistent promised returns. Those are the areas that they saw that those two people had the biggest, or those were two of the areas people went into these bad investments on based on those two things. Very interesting stuff.
So could someone actually look that up and watch that video on their own?
Absolutely. It's for free. It's on the Indiana State website. And if you go to the Indiana Securities Division, you'll be able to find
awesome.
That.
Awesome. Thank you, Doug, for that. Hey, and again, thank you to the Chamber of Commerce for voting Comprehensive Financial the mid-sized company of the year. I'm so grateful for that and very humbled. Hey, I hope everyone has a great weekend. We'll talk to you again next week on Your Money with David Hayes. Goodbye. The preceding program was brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities.